due to the pace of the EU's vaccination rollout programme.
There's economic disaster looming for millions of businesses in the EU as new lockdowns are announced. In some nations, jobs are being lost at a record rate. The tourism industry is on its knees. Citizens are frustrated.
Our government was telling that it would be better in May and the opening of the cafes, restaurants and so on. And nowadays, I don't dare make a plan.
For the moment, the situation is so difficult that everybody's complaining about everything. And I understand that. It's not easy.
Critics say the health, social and economic consequences of the EU's failures during this crisis are not yet fully clear. Analysts warn there are likely to be dire political consequences for the establishment. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A massive air show in Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. The armed forces flexed their muscles on the eve of Pakistan's National Day. Pakistan celebrates every year the very idea of its creation in the name of Islam over 80 years ago, when this part of the world, together with India, was under the imperial rule of the British. The significant part of the air show was the acrobatic maneuverability of warplanes known as JF Thunder. Pakistan indigenously manufactured them in cooperation with China after the US stopped the supplies of F-16 fighter jets. Pakistan is fast reducing its reliance on the US for military hardware with the growing role of China in the indigenous production of its high-tech weapons with focus on fighter jets.
Pakistan is today manufacturing the JS-17, which has excellent capabilities in a way is replacing the F-16. And if even the spares are denied to Pakistan, it seeks those from other countries or tries to manufacture it within Pakistan. The US has many restrictions and sanctions. It's relying more and more on China and other European countries.
Pakistan had four wars with India, three of which over disputed Kashmir region, divided between two nuclear-armed neighbors in South Asia.
Pakistan is a strong nuclear-armed state. Beyond an iota of doubt, the peace in the region is linked with the fair solution of Kashmir dispute. We want to move forward with a desire of peace, but let me make it clear that our desire for peace must not be mistaken our weakness. Any misadventure against Pakistan would be responded back with a full force.
According to a study by American think tanks like Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and Simpson Center, Islamabad is far outpacing New Delhi in the development of nuclear warheads, and Pakistan would possess more nuclear weapons than any other country except Russia and US within the next 4 to 5 years. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
After more than 2 months of almost unprecedented delay, United States President Joe Biden faced journalists in his very first press conference. Biden often read from prepared notes and spoke for just an hour. He selected the reporters who could ask him questions and avoided the conservative media, which has regularly asked that he finally engage with journalists without scripted questions or aides to help him.
Biden doesn't have any. Why? I think you're... the speculation is that is very valid, that he is in cognitive decline. They're worried that he wouldn't be able to hold up over press questioning for a while. They're worried that he won't be able to hold up if he had to give a good big speech.
Biden fielded questions on changes to voting laws and the Senate filibuster tactic, avoided questions on gun control, and said he expects to run for re-election. Even though the country is in the middle of the worst socioeconomic crisis since the Great Depression, the mainstream media journalists allowed to attend awarded the largest portion of their questions to a problem outside the country's borders, the increase of refugees from Latin America. There appeared to be very little of the often extreme combativeness and skepticism towards Biden as there was towards his predecessor, Donald Trump. During the presidential campaign, both mainstream media and social media corporations were routinely accused of giving Biden preferential treatment. Corruption allegations involving his son went ignored, while many said Biden rarely faced difficult questions.
There's the right-wing press that, of course, are going to attack him. And then there's the press that support him, and they're not going to say anything critical of him. They're not going to say anything critical of certain Democrats either.
On foreign policy, neither Iran nor Russia was mentioned. Regarding Afghanistan, Biden said it would be hard to meet the May 1st deadline set for America's total withdrawal, but he also said that he did not picture troops still occupying Afghanistan in 2022. Keeping up his antagonistic stance towards China, Biden alleged that Chinese President Xi Jinping, quote, doesn't have a democratic bone in his body. Rami Mazahiri, Chicago.
Indian police raided and detained a family in refugee camp in the outskirts of New Delhi. Members of the community say the police detained a family of six without any reasons, giving them no chance of even having their breakfast. The whole community is terrified, and panic has gripped the entire camp about their fate.
There is an uneasy calm and a sense of fear in this refugee camp after dozens were detained in recent weeks. Now people are more fearful, anticipating their turn, which they say is inevitable after years of vicious campaigns calling for their expulsion from India.
This refugee, who did not want it to be named, says police and law enforcement agencies frequently visit their camps and ask for their details. He says the visits are more frequent since last few weeks.
We are all terrified. It looks like our legs are broken and we are just alive. Since the Indian government has started detaining our members of our community, the whole camp is gripped in fear. We can't even sleep. We are burdened to everyone and no one cares about us. We are refugees. We came here to save our lives, to save our children. And we are grateful India gave us refuge since years.
Minority Rohingya Muslims have for decades fled neighboring Bangladesh and other countries, including India, escaping genocide in their country. Estimates suggest some 40,000 Rohingya refugees are living across different states of India.
Where are we being detained? If we are a problem for India, let them send us to some other country, wherever they feel we are safe. We are already dead, since we belong to nowhere. Now this detention issue is killing us every day and night. We left our country to save our lives. And in India we found peace, despite hardships.
Rights groups have urged India to halt any deportation plan, saying conditions in Myanmar are not conducive. They say the Indian government should uphold its international obligations and protect those in need of refuge within its borders, saying India has hosted refugees from many countries since decades, but adopted an aggressive approach towards Rohingya Muslims in particular. Munawar Zaman in the outskirts of New Delhi.
In a press conference, Yemen's Eye of Humanity Center for Rights and Development revealed the number of victims of 6 years of Saudi war on the country, which has also caused massive destruction to the infrastructure of the country.
There are 43,593 civilians killed and wounded during the past 6 years. 17,097 of them were killed, including 3,821 children and 2,394 women. As for the wounded, they numbered 26,496, including 4,183 children and 2,1815 women.
The center says Saudi airstrikes targeted thousands of civilian facilities deliberately, including hospitals and schools. Meanwhile, millions of families were displaced as over 500,000 homes were ruined in more than 20 governorates.
This report monitored the crimes and violations committed by the Saudi-led coalition against civilians in Yemen, as well as the destruction and damage resulted from the brutal targeting of thousands of civilian installations, including homes, hospitals, schools, mosques, roads, bridges, and historical monuments. Even the cemeteries were not spared.
During 6 years of war, Saudi Arabia committed thousands of violations of international humanitarian law, including using internationally prohibited weapons such as cluster bombs in targeting residential areas. As the Saudi campaign against Yemen enters its seventh year, Yemen is saying Riyadh is still violating the international human rights law by holding 14 Yemeni oil ships amid the continued neglect of the international community. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
A moment of silence for more than 126,000 Britons who have died since the UK government announced the UK's first lockdown this time last year. And as the country prepares to exit its third, the government's handling of the crisis is being called into question. Some say the success of the vaccine rollout is being used to obscure just how unprepared the government was and how Britain has been made poorer by poor decision-making. Economists say the lowest income bracket will have to foot the bill, which may exceed £355 billion.
The taxpayer will foot almost certainly most of it, and it's 355, but then you've got the next year's borrowing, which be another 234 and another 100 on top of that, getting up to 700-800 a billion. The key point about this is that the whole of their philosophy is based on the idea that the very wealthy will trickle down their wealth to the mass of the population. That never happens.
The Public Accounts Committee said earlier this year the government's lack of economic planning and preparation for a pandemic was astonishing, despite it being one of the top risks identified in the National Risk Register. Billions have been thrown at businesses in danger of going under, and if the borrowers can't repay them, the taxpayer will.
They panic, and they are in a panic situation at the moment. They're just crossing their fingers and hoping it will go well, but they're still in panic mood, and that explains why they just shoved out the money.
There is no way of knowing how many fraudulent claims have been made, and it is forecast many businesses will not be able to repay their debt, so the British public will have to. Throughout the pandemic, the government reassured lenders who were not required to perform any credit or affordability checks by guaranteeing loans 100%. But that can't be said for the British public, that is already reeling from years of declining social mobility and a near decade of rising child poverty. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of Halim, please.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makes the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. Iran and China have signed a 25-year partnership pact aimed at strengthening their economic, political, and trade ties. While both countries remain under U.S. sanctions, this may well be considered a real challenge to the Biden administration, which has not changed its course as far as these two countries are concerned. In this edition of The Debate, we will shed light on the different aspects of this pact and discuss how it can potentially change the economic and political equations.
It's not the first time China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, has visited Tehran. But this time, there's a historic difference. On Saturday, Wang Yi and his Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif, signed the much-anticipated 25-year comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. The Sino-Iranian deal was announced in a joint statement during a visit by the Chinese president to Tehran in 2016. The cooperation roadmap consists of 20 articles covering Tehran-Beijing ties in a range of economic, political, and security areas. There are reports that the pact would see Iran supply China with oil for 25 years. In return, China would invest in Iran's ports as well as banking and telecom sectors, which amount to some $400 billion. The deal has sparked mixed reactions by observers, with some saying the deal is one-sided toward China.
The deal is yet to be finalized, and the detail will gradually be publicized in the future. But what's clear is that China needs Iran's oil. In fact, China has always been a major buyer of Iran's crude oil with or without the deal. So Tehran should be careful what it gains in the new agreement.
Others say the agreement is a geopolitical win against a common opponent, the United States, which is engaged in an economic war with both China and Iran.
The aims of the U.S. maximum pressure campaign is to isolate Iran and improving relations and having strategic relations with countries that can resist the United States pressures, countries like China, is going to be essential for Iran's foreign policy. Sanctioning Iran is going to be much more difficult. Iran is dependent on U.S. dollar when Iran's trade with the other side is going to use yuan or other currencies. That's going to be useful for Iran's trade.
China is Iran's number one trade partner, but this economic partnership has been restricted by the U.S. banking sanctions against Iran. In 2020, bilateral trade between the two states was less than $20 billion. Both sides agree that the new pact will pave the way for broader partnership, not only in economy, but in politics and security. It's crystal clear that Iran and China are strategic partners. China continues to buy Iran's oil amid the peak of the U.S. sanctions against Iran. But the new pact is a milestone. Observers say at a time when the U.S. is using its currency as a punishing tool, more countries are expected to jump on the wagon and create a united front as a counterforce to the U.S. economic pressures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Well, to continue this discussion, we are joined by historian and journalist and author Marcus Papadopoulos out of London and senior analyst and foreign policy in focus, Ian Williams, out of New York. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen. Let's begin with Mr. Marcus Papadopoulos. In what ways, Mr. Papadopoulos, do you believe that the alliance between Tehran and Beijing can be a challenge to the Biden administration? Let's not forget that the new U.S. administration is trying to rally its allies against China, and an effort that the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has described as the greatest geopolitical test. So do you think that this deal will affect these U.S. plans?
Well, today is a momentous one for Iran and China, and it certainly constitutes a direct challenge to American aggression on Iran, because Iranian-Chinese relations, which span some 2,000 years, have been taken to a arguably unprecedented height because of today's agreement. The agreement spans a whole array of areas. For example, Beijing and Tehran cooperating on matters relating to defense. But it is certainly the case that the foremost matter which has been agreed on by the Iranians and the Chinese is trade and investment. China is going to invest over 25 years some $400 billion in Iran. And in return, Iran will get ensure a constant, uninterrupted flow of oil to China. Now, for the Chinese, that is extremely important because China does not have a large amount of natural resources, for example, oil and gas, and also water. Therefore, in order for the Chinese to sustain the Chinese economic miracle, the Chinese economy has to be in constant receipt of oil. And that is why this agreement is so important. Now, for Iran, the fact that China will be investing something like $400 billion in Iranian infrastructure is highly important because there are many sectors in Iran which the Iranian government wishes to modernize, for example, hospitals and clinics. But at present, Western companies, such as British companies, are prohibited from modernizing the infrastructure because of American sanctions. And the fact that Iran will be able now to export oil to Iran to China means that the severity of American sanctions on Iran will become less severe because Iran now has a very large, a very substantial market for its oil. And I would say as well that whilst I understand that there are some people in Iran who are, let's say, lukewarm about today's monumental agreement, at the same time, I would say this, that yes, it does give China considerable influence over, for example, Iranian natural resources, but the Chinese economic miracle is going to be present in global affairs for the foreseeable future, whether you like that or not. Therefore, Iran has to pursue a close economic relationship with China in order to accrue serious economic benefit, because Iran's economic relationships with, for example, Britain, France, and Germany, though they are significant, they are not enough to lessen the severity of the impact of American sanctions on Iran. So all in all, I believe that Iran, the Iranian Chinese agreement, is one to be applauded.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Williams, this comprehensive pact comes while Iran has been facing political and economic pressures from various U.S. administrations. The U.S. aim along these years was to isolate Iran. How do you think this agreement can unravel Washington's anti-Iran policies?
Well, it's difficult because all the parties concerned have previously backed themselves into a corner. I mean, you don't make strategic alliances. It's not necessarily friendship. It's an alliance of convenience. The convenience for the Chinese is they're getting oil, according to Iranian reports from people who disagree with the agreement, at a significant... What Iran is getting is equally significant. It's getting away past the dollar blockade put on by the United States. What the United States is getting is a smack in the face because they're losing a huge potential market to China yet again, and when they've already done so frequently. And it also loses them leverage in terms of the resuming the JCPOA, which the Iranians, in principle, quite rightly, want to do unconditionally, and the remnants of the Israel lobby and the Biden administration want to force extra concessions from Iran. So, you know, everybody gains something. Lots of people lose something from this. The Chinese win, hands down.
So, Mr.
One of the issues, one of the political issues for Iran it's got to reconcile with its standing in the world is the news broadcast just before this mentioned the Chinese treatment of the Uyghurs. And, you know, of course, Iran is not unique in this. Most of the Islamic countries have kept quiet in the face of America, of Chinese pressure. about what the PRC is doing in Dlugwiggers. And there's also the question of Myanmar, which is burning at the moment, where there's naked repression, which is being fairly overtly supported by China. So it's a trade-off for Iran. And as long as Iran makes it plain that this is a deal that they have to do because of the US, and this doesn't mean that they love everything that Beijing does, then they should be able to get away with it. So it's overall, it's probably a win. But they're still being forced to sell their assets more cheaply than they should because of the American blockade.
I see. Thank you. Mr. Williams, so do you believe that this could probably persuade the Americans to go back to the JCPOA?
Incremental pressure. I mean, look, many of us for many years on your program and others have been, first of all, started off predicting and then scratching our heads and wondering when were the other countries of the world going to get together and bypass the US dollar? Whether it was going to be the euro, certainly not the ruble, or the Chinese RMB, you know, the different currencies, what could we do to get past the American stranglehold on the world currency markets, on world finance, in fact? So, this is yet a further stage in the erosion of dollar hegemony, and everything that does that is probably to the good in the end. I welcome it on that way. But I also have to say that I've got the year, I've got 10, 15 years of frustrated optimism behind me. I've been predicting this.
Yes, I'm very sorry, but Mr. Williams, I asked about the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, and I said, would that persuade the U.S. to go back to the nuclear deal?
Oh, I was thinking of overall, but yes, I think that's what I said. Is I said it will be an incremental reason for the people who want the JCPOA deal in Washington to push further against the diehards who are anti-Iranian and pro-Israeli to the max. So, yes, I think that the loss of Iranian markets to China, the fact that obviously the pressure isn't working, if the Chinese are giving a backdoor entry to the Iranians, it should help persuade those people in Washington. And there are quite a lot who sincerely hope that the JCPOA is revived, and also the pressure from the Europeans, because they're losing out. They see markets going to the Chinese that they would rather like to have as well.
Thank you very much. Mr. Papadopoulos, this deal seems to send a clear message to the world that the countries do not necessarily need the U.S. to achieve their goals and objectives with respect to their national interests. Could it be the start of a new alliance that's being formed with the U.S. without the U.S. being part?
Well, I think it's certainly the case that Iran can flourish in the world by having very close relationships, strategic partnerships, be them formal or informal, with countries such as Russia and China. But I still believe that the grave, menacing threat from America to Iran will continue no matter what the Iranian government does on the international scene, no matter how close relations between Tehran and Beijing or Tehran and Moscow become. The Americans are absolutely intent on destroying the Iranian revolution, rolling back the very many great achievements of the Iranian revolution, and returning Iran to how it was during the days of the Shah, a client state. And I do not believe that the landmark agreement today between Beijing and Tehran will compel the Biden administration to return America to the JCPOA. I believe there is virtually no chance of that happening, because the Iranians have made it very clear that in order for America to return to the JCPOA, America or the Biden administration must rescind the sanctions placed on Iran during the Trump era. And Biden has said that will not happen. That is non-negotiable. So America is not going to return to the JCPOA. But
so, Mr. Papadopoulos, you believe even the economic situation and the fact that, as our other guest just mentioned, China is taking over a great market in Iran was not enough to persuade the Americans?
No, absolutely not. What the Americans want in Iran is to see a compliant government, a compliant government to Western demands, Israeli demands, and Saudi demands in Tehran. The fact that China is going to be able to increase its leverage in Iran and also in the Middle East, of course, will not be to the liking of Washington, but ultimately, the Americans believe they can contain Iranian influence in the Middle East and Chinese influence in the Middle East. And I should say this as well. I believe that it is incorrect that it is incorrect for analysts to believe that because of the today's agreement, China is going to rapidly increase its modest influence in the Middle East. Why do I say that? Because there is a tacit agreement between Russia and China in which Russia recognizes Chinese predominance in Northeast Asia affairs, while at the same time, China recognizes Russia's leading role in, for example, the Middle East and Ukraine. So China, whilst it has influence in the Middle East, though it has to be said modest influence, is not going to increase its influence in the Middle East because of the agreement, because of today's agreement with China, because China does not wish to disrupt its relationship, its magnificent relationship with Russia.
I see. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Williams, China is pushing ahead to establish itself as a major global and political economic power. The U.S., on the other hand, seems to be sticking to a unipolar worldview. Has the time come for the U.S. to realize that the world is a different place now?
Time, not just come, it's been long overdue. Also from the Middle East, the writing has been on the wall in the palace of the king for a long, long time. They have definitely been, they're definitely approaching the end game. The more astute of them realize that. And that's why I think it's wrong to see the U.S. as a homogenous interest on this. There are lots of different interests in Washington competing, and whatever principles they wave around, they will sell people out if necessary. They've dropped people before. You might remember the key one, in fact, was with China, where they had diehard allies in Chiang Kai-shek, where they had a huge lobby in Washington. But as soon as enough people along with Nixon and Kissinger sat down there and did the math, they said no.
Thank you very much.
We're going to recognize the People's Republic of China. No, it was because it was expedient, and that's the way they'll treat this as well. With Iran, if they want to pick up Iran, and even with the pressure of the lobby, drop other allies in the Middle East, they'll do it. They're already beginning to.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Mr. Papadopoulos, we're running out of time, but I would definitely like to have your view on this question as well. Do you believe that the U.S. will realize that the world is a different place now?
Absolutely not. And I would cite two factors in accounting for that. Firstly, American exceptionalism. And secondly, and most importantly of all, American mastery of the international stage. Though it has weakened in recent years because Russia has resurrected its superpower status, remains nonetheless formidable. And American dominance of the international stage is not seriously going to be challenged by China. There is talk of a multipolar world. I believe that what we are in the process of seeing is a return to what we saw during the days of the Cold War, namely two global superpowers. Russia is a global superpower. America is the overall dominant global superpower. China is not a global superpower. China is a regional superpower. I do not believe that India or Brazil have what it takes to become even a regional superpower, let alone a global superpower. So I believe that what we are seeing today is comparable to what we saw during the Cold War, two superpowers. And in that case, I believe that we should be grateful, because gone are the days of the 1990s when America was the only superpower in the world, and they were able to ride roughshod over the United Nations Charter, over international law, as they did in Bosnia, as they did in Croatia, and as they did in Kosovo. Today, because Russia is a superpower, the Americans do not have the abilities they had in the 1990s to do as they pleased in the world.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, journalist, and author, joining us from London, and also senior analyst from the Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, out in New York. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen, and thanks for following this edition of The Debate.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Highlights from leader's Nowruz speech. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, delivered a speech on 21st of March, the first day of Farvardin and the first day of the Iranian New Year, in which he talked about a host of important domestic and global issues. Ayatollah Khamenei used to deliver the speech at the Holy Shrine of Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Riza, peace be upon him, in Mashhad in northeastern Iran. But due to the coronavirus outbreak in February of 2020, he changed his public speech to a live televised speech. Stay tuned for some of the outstanding points of the leader's speech. Ayatollah Khamenei congratulated the start of the new year, 1400 solar Hijri year, and the beginning of a new century. He said, "If we want to make a simple and meaningful comparison between the beginning of previous and this centuries, that is, solar Hijri year 1300 was the beginning of the dependent dictatorship of Reza Khan, which was in fact a British coup d'etat through Reza Khan and his mercenary forces. That start of a dictatorial regime and British rule in this country. That was 1300 solar Hijri year. This year, as we usher in solar Hijri year 1400, we have an upcoming presidential election. It means an independent government based on independence, relying on people's votes, self-reliance, and national self-reliance. The ushering in of this new century is in sharp contrast with the previous century, and there are very important differences between 1300 and 1400 solar Hijri years. We hope that God will direct all of our affairs, and through his blessings, we shall move forward and continue our advancement. The leader, in his message for the new Iranian year, designated this year as the year of production, support, and removal of obstacles. He put emphasis on the issue of manufacturing and production in his speech. Ayatollah Khamenei said economic deficiencies have played into the hands of some opponents who want to disappoint the people and claim conditions will not improve. In view of the leader, Iran's economy has a lot of capacities which, through proper planning and management, Iran's economy can turn into one of the most thriving economies in the region, as well as the wider world. He said, from the perspective of the World Bank, there are two kinds of resources. One of them is natural resources, land-based resources, and the other is human resources. Land-based resources and capacities, including the area of the country, access to the high seas, we're adjacent to the Sea of Oman and to the Indian Ocean, and have access to the high seas. As for our neighbors, we have 14 or 15 neighboring countries with a total population of well over 600 million people. This provides us with a very important opportunity and resource. The east-west and north-south transit corridors are also very important for business, trade, and economics, and have shaped the current situation in our country. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution said, the manpower resources means the number of people who are at a working age. Look, thanks to the population growth that happened in the 1980s, with some individuals questioning the wisdom of such a move at the time, but today the younger generation has entered the workforce. It means our country is a young country with a talented and skilled young workforce which has entered the labor market. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei referred to the natural resources and infrastructure, saying, as for our underground resources like oil, gas, zinc, copper, iron ore, and so on, we are well positioned in the world, being ranked first, second to ninth. We have these huge natural resources. While this is a very substantial resource, in addition to these, important infrastructure have developed in this country during the past 30 years, which didn't previously exist. Infrastructure such as dams, power plants, railway lines, transportation routes, road transportation, etc. In a country with so many resources and capacities, if there is proper economic planning and management, we can turn this country into an advanced industrialized economy and make it immune to sanctions. In another part of his speech, the leader referred to the issue of sanctions and described it as one of the big crimes of governments. He said, blocking a country's access to food and medicine is a crime. Ayatollah Khamenei continued by saying, however, the sanctions have benefited Iran and our nation has managed to turn this threat into an opportunity. Leader pointed to two ways to confront sanctions, namely begging for reduction or lifting of sanctions, which will surely result in arrogant demands from the other party and will lead to humility, decadence, and backwardness, and activating our own domestic forces to produce the sanctioned commodity. This second way is far more effective. It will cause the other side to submit and will bypass the sanctions, making them ineffective. He said, I see that the dear nation has chosen the second way and has achieved great successes, among them the success in combating the coronavirus. If you remember, when coronavirus broke out, we didn't even have face masks, There were no adequate facilities for wearing masks, and we had a shortage of disinfectants. But because of our own domestic efforts, through the efforts of our scientists, we're now self-sufficient in production of face masks. Now we have produced vaccines which, thank God, are effective in immunizing the population and curbing the spread of the coronavirus. This is a source of pride and prestige for the country. I mean, some fair foreign analysts are admitting that we have succeeded. Our nation has chosen this way, and God willing, will continue on the same path. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei then referred to their knowledge-based company, saying, "As for the new and emerging sciences like nanotechnology, today we stand among the top countries in the field of nanotechnology and nanoproduction. As far as scientific articles and reference articles are concerned, global scientific centers have confirmed that in 2001, Iran published just 10 articles in nanotechnology, but last year, in 2020, we published 12,000 articles. It means that during 20-year period, we have gone from 10 articles to 12,000 articles. Thank God such things have been done in this country. In defense sector too, thank God the country is becoming more prominent and more brilliant. The advances in the defense sector and defense production mean more security for the country. This is very important. These guarantee Iran's security." Pointing to the upcoming presidential election, the leader said, "In the election, from an internal point of view, a renewal takes place inside the country and fresh and motivated individuals enter the scene and fresh breath enters the administrative branch of the government. As for the foreign aspect too, the election and people's participation in the presidential election points to Iran's national might. Ayatollah Khamenei called on the people to be very careful about who they elect to the office of the president, since the president carries the highest amount of responsibilities in the country. He said, "Iran's president must be an efficient, pious, justice-seeking, anti-corruption individual with a revolutionary and jihadi performance and must genuinely believe in the internal capabilities and the highly talented younger generation of Iranians who are acting as a driving engine for the country." The leader concluded his speech with a reference to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, saying, "The maximum pressure policy of the Americans failed, and if the new American administration wants to continue with the same policy, it will fail also, and Iran will become stronger day by day." The leader made it clear that Iran's policy vis-a-vis the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, is the same that has been announced on several occasions. In other words, the United States must lift all sanctions against Iran, then Iran will verify its conduct, and if the sanctions are really lifted, Tehran will return to its JCPOA commitments. Pointing to the remarks of some American officials on the necessity of change in their nuclear deal because of changing conditions, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei pointed out that, he said, "Yes, conditions have changed in comparison to 2015, but this change has been to the benefit of Iran and not the United States. Today, Iran has become much stronger and more self-reliant, while the United States has become weaker and more beleaguered and isolated because an administration came to power that scandalized the United States with its words, deeds, and withdrawals. And the United States has also grappled with economic problems of its own. Today, also the fate of the new U.S. president is not clear." The leader emphasized the fact that Iran is not in a hurry for Washington's return to JCPOA. He also pointed to the issue of Palestine, saying Palestine will never be forgotten by the Islamic Ummah.
morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.